You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Listening to Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. Neither Amber nor Ian are in tonight. I'm Jonathan Zaslow. He is Jake Asman. And NBA, front and center right now. We got some things to get to tonight. We got some big games on tap at 10 p.m. Bucks and Warriors, 10 p.m. East at 10:30 East. We got Kings and Lakers. Let's bring aboard some help here. ESPN NBA analyst Tim Legler joining us on the program. Tim, thanks a lot for spending some time with us here. So last night, the Phoenix Suns, great win in overtime at the Denver Nuggets. I would have to think it's the best win of the season for Phoenix. Should we start to take this Suns team serious, Tim?
Yeah, I definitely think you should. I mean, there's things with them that have to be cleaned up between now and the time that these games really matter when you get to the playoffs. But that's a big step forward, particularly in that game, because they had a lead, they relinquished it, and if you give up a lead like that to Denver in their building, typically Denver's going to go ahead and close the deal there. And, Kevin Durant was sensational down the stretch with his shot making. They got some stops when they had to, and sometimes we use the phrase getting stops, and I think we give too much credit to the defense because it's really just guys missing shots. I actually thought Phoenix's defense was very energized, and they had a lot of great activity. And that's really what it's going to take from them. And then the thing they need to iron out once they get all three guys healthy is they just got to figure out a flow to their offense where it's not just a series of difficult shots between three great players. And that's the part that needs time. I think they only played 23 games together. It's just not enough time. So that's what I want to see going forward. There's no doubt they've got the talent to make a run at the Western Conference. There's no question about that. But it takes a lot more than talent. It takes, a commitment defensively, and it takes a flow offensively where you're making it hard to guard. And I think that's what's going to be the final piece for them over this last month or so.
Tim, at this stage in his career, if Kevin Durant stays healthy, do you still look at him like he's an alpha enough player to be the leading catalyst on a team that could actually not just compete in the playoffs but actually win a championship?
Yeah, I definitely think he still has that in him. I think it's just leadership questions come up a lot this year. And, it's interesting because no one questioned it before. But now that he's trying to win one since he left Golden State, it's become this major thing that his persona is not strong enough. Like, he's not vocal enough. He doesn't make guys accountable enough. He kind of just shows up and does his thing, and he does it at a high level, and he does it every day. And that's been enough for him his entire career. I still think it is. And I still think he certainly has the game to get it done when it matters most. I think the thing that's difficult for the Suns, and there's other teams going to be in the same boat, you're just not going to win a title. You're not running through the West. You're not running through Denver and probably the Clippers. I would put in that category as well. And maybe even a team like Oklahoma City. You're not going to run through those teams if you are insistent upon, coming up the floor, the ball staying on one side, and whichever one of those three great players wants to go and attack and try to get a shot for themselves. If that's how you're going to play, you're going to go home. So that's, to me, it's not about Durant's, is he good enough still to carry a team like that? Is he good enough to be, big when he needs to be in the big spots? Those are all very, very true still. And I think his leadership has always been good enough the way that he carries himself. It's really about the chemistry between those three guys. And I think a lot of that falls on Frank Vogel. Some of these coaches with all this talent at the top of their roster, they've got to be looked at squarely. Can you get the most out of it? I think Jason Kidd's in the same boat. Dallas is in a free fall right now, and it's inexcusable. They've got too much talent to be this lethargic defensively most nights, and that's Jason Kidd's issue. So there are teams with talent in the West that haven't put it together and how to create chemistry and a team flow. Obviously, Denver is the benchmark for that.
ESPN NBA analyst Tim Legler joining us here on Amber and Ian. Alongside Jake Asman, I'm Jonathan Zaslow. So, Tim, every few days, I keep looking at the play-in slots in the Western Conference, and I'm expecting the Lakers and Warriors to eventually move up out of 9-10, but they can't seem to move out of that 9-10 matchup. They're always there. Would the NBA, if we could pump the NBA with truth serum, do they like a play-in matchup of Lakers-Warriors? Because it sounds juicy as heck, but it also means one of them is not making the postseason.
Yeah, no. If you hook those guys up to a polygraph, I think they would be they'd be caught lying if they said they're fine with just one of them going through because they want that one-off matchup. No, they want both teams to go through it. And here's the problem: I just don't know there's enough time to catch the teams you're going to have to catch. You know, you're going to have to catch Phoenix probably. You're going to catch New Orleans. Like, those teams aren't going to lose enough games to make up three games in the loss column or whatever it is right now. It's difficult because it's not just a matter of, like, you know, oh, they only have to, you know, leapfrog one team. Well, the teams they're trying to catch, they're winning games too. So it's just you run out of time with just a little over 20 games left in the season. It looks like we are going to have certainly LeBron James and Steph Curry. And at one point, it looked like Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns, maybe, and that's still not decided. They could still slip in there, or you could have Luka Doncic. I mean, you're talking about four of the biggest stars in the game potentially involved in this play-in, with a lot of pressure, a lot of stake, and going home for that 9-10 after one game. So there's a lot at stake here, but you're trying to catch teams that are pretty good teams that are just not going to give you enough space. Even if you play 700 ball, you know, those teams play 500, they're probably still going to stay ahead of you.
Tim, how about the Eastern Conference Warriors-Bucks tonight? Doc Rivers and the Bucks, they've won six straight. They won eight of their last 10. What's changed with them? Have they figured things out?
Well, I think, you know, I did a breakdown of this the other night because I'm trying to figure out, like, to what extent is this Doc Rivers having an impact? Like, really? Because it's very hard for a coach to come in on the fly when you've had patterns established since really September. And now you're going to on the fly midseason, you know, with, you know, 39 games left or whatever it was. 39, I believe, games left in the season when he took over, and then the All-Star break hit. They don't practice much in the NBA on off days anymore. It's a different world. They do a lot of film session and some walkthroughs, and some of the guys that don't play as much will be in there working out. But everything's light now on off days, so you don't get time to implement it. But I watched them the other night against the Clippers, and they played a lot of zone in that game, which could be something they could utilize more because it was pretty effective in that game. And I think a lot of that's to protect Damian Lillard defensively, because there's such a drop-off between Drew Holiday, who used to play that spot and won a championship with, and Damian Lillard. So I think that's part of it. I think they're playing harder, to be honest with you. It's just effort. I see them running back harder in transition. I see them, you know, communicating better and flying to penetration the way that the Bucks did when they won the championship. So some of it is just, I joke all the time, like, I've coached a lot of basketball in my life, and one of my favorite defensive play calls was play harder. It's not really that complicated if you just commit more effort, and I have seen an uptick in that, and I think some of that could be just respect for Doc Rivers. Maybe he has a way of talking to those guys that this garners more respect and attention because he's been around so long and he's won in this league, and he has more accountability that he's able to throw at these guys, because it's definitely something has changed. Their confidence level's up. Now, there's one piece left for them. I still don't think Damian Lillard is operating at full speed when Giannis plays. I just don't, he doesn't look fully comfortable. There's some sort of deference that's there that he's got to get through, where he can just go be himself and be the guy that he was in Portland. And Giannis is encouraging him to do it, but it's difficult when you're playing next to a guy for the first time in your career that's a better player than you. And I think Dame has struggled with that at times. When Giannis hasn't played, he's been sensational. But when Giannis is out there with him, he's had some nights, but there's a lot of nights where it just doesn't quite look the same. And let's see if they can figure that part out as well over the last 20-plus games.
Tim Legler here with us on Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio. So, Tim, I'm here in Miami. I'm a Miami Heat guy. I mean, I ooze Heat culture, all right? And I'm very excited about the way the Heat are playing right now. But I'm admittedly very biased about the Heat, Tim. So the fact that I feel so good about where they're headed right now, is that my bias showing, or are my feelings justified right now?
No, they're justified. That's just one of those teams, you know, that you just can't ever really turn the light out on. You just can't, because, number one, they've got tough guys, and they've got, I think Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the NBA, and you're just not going to ever really get rid of them. They're going to lurk. And this is an interesting year in the Eastern Conference, because clearly Boston's been the best team in the NBA. But after that, you know, the Bucks, they had their struggles for a long time defensively. People were starting to really doubt whether, you know, they were a legitimate title contender, as bad as they were defensively. You, of course, had Embiid's injury, which took Philly really much out of it for the most part. The Knicks, they looked really good, and then they added guys, and then all of them got hurt. So, like, we're waiting to see what the Knicks are. The Cavaliers, they're still right there where they've been this whole time, and I don't think a lot of people believe in them. So you have this void created of who's going to grab that spot, who's going to take that mantle and claim at least an opportunity to be the second-best team in the Eastern Conference. I think it's up for grabs, and I think Milwaukee and Miami are probably the two teams I'd look at right now until the Knicks get right, because I think the Knicks, when they're fully healthy, the depth that they have and the firepower that they added by bringing in four new players that are all going to be major contributors, that's a lot. But you also need time to organize that and get a rotation down. If you're Tom Thibodeau, he just hasn't had a chance to do it. So I would say Milwaukee clearly getting their act together now. Miami is surging. And then the Knicks are that one team you've got to watch out for if they get everybody back in time. And they've got 10, 12 games left in the season. That might be enough time to really get their act together, because they play so hard, they could be a problem as well. So it's going to be an interesting battle to see who ultimately takes on the Celtics. And some of that might be avoid the Celtics if you can. Like, don't finish in that 4-5 spot, because you're going to get them in the second round. So that's going to be some gamesmanship, I think, around that as you get closer to the playoffs. That's the last place you want to be if you're one of the teams I mentioned.
We got a couple of good games still on tap here later on tonight. Tim Legler, ESPN NBA analyst. Great job, Tim. Thanks a lot for hanging out with us for a few minutes here on Amber and Ian.
Anytime. Appreciate coming up.
You also got Jake. Right now, the Rockets are really laying it to the Clippers. They're up 11 in the middle of the third quarter. They've been up double figures the whole game. The Clippers have been struggling lately. You into the Clippers? You believe in this Clipper team at all?
They have James Harden, so no. That's all my right. stance. I'm definitely biased, though. I covered Harden for 5 years doing radio in Houston. It just I guess the saving grace for the Clippers is with Harden. He's like the three on that team technically, with Kawhi and Paul George there. But I don't know. Tough to fully buy into the Clippers just because we haven't seen it. This is probably their best shot at it, though, relative to, you know, just kind of the West being like more wide open than maybe it's been without that true dominant. Hey, this team, no matter what, you know, is going to be their team.
Appreciate Tim hanging out with us here for a few minutes. Coming up next on Amber and Ian, a little would you rather quarterback style. That's next on Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
I'm not sure Amber Wilson or Ian Fitzsimmons, for that matter, would approve of the rejoin music here, but for me, it's right up my alley. I'm Jonathan Zaslow. He's Jake Asman. You're listening to Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 8. Although, Lemmy Kilmister, a little Motorhead. Is this up your alley, Jake? Are you into it?
I don't dislike it. I can't say it's up my alley, but I'm kind of weird. I like all types of music, man. Like, you know, I saw 50 Cent in concert the other night at the Houston Rodeo, and really? I also am wearing a Billy Joel t-shirt right now. So I like all types of music.
Okay, there you go. Well, there are all types of quarterbacks that are seemingly available right now this NFL offseason. It's so weird, right, Jake, where this is only a trend that started over the last few years where quarterbacks, like starting caliber quarterbacks, are available in the offseason. This was never a thing. I know you could look down the list. You know, we're talking Baker Mayfield, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson. And you may want to have a debate whether guys like Baker Mayfield, Russell Wilson should be starting quarterbacks. But the fact of the matter is, they are starting caliber quarterbacks. That was never the case, even as recently as within 10 years ago. The only quarterbacks who would be available in the offseason were 100% backup quarterbacks. They were guys who were definitely not starters. Or if they were starters, it's because you're using them as a placeholder to then get to, you know, the young quarterback that you just drafted. So this is a rather new thing where every offseason now you have guys who are considered starting quarterbacks who are available. And one of them who is available, the Broncos have actually told Russell Wilson that they're allowing him, before they officially release him, they're allowing him to talk to other teams, see if there's someone that wants to make a trade. Here's ESPN NFL analyst Louis Riddick. He was on Get Up.
Well, considering that I think Russ at this point is a temporary option, just a filler, a bridge quarterback, I think there's two. I think the Steelers, he's someone that they should consider to bring in and provide competition for Kenny Pickett, and then he could be a high-level backup. Or the Giants now obviously have entered the mix, because if it's true that they have now really wanted to or wanting to turn the page on Daniel Jones and they're going to draft a young quarterback, Russ needs to be that guy who is also a bridge quarterback until the time that a young quarterback is ready to take over there. So I think those are the two best ones for him going forward.
You know, Jake, that was Louis Riddick on Get Up, and I could see a scenario, Jake, where Russell Wilson is a bridge quarterback, but I can't see a scenario like, say, Pittsburgh, where you bring Russ in to, I guess, compete with, but maybe then be the backup to a guy like Kenny Pickett. I think that scenario, if Russell Wilson is the backup, I think that becomes a distraction. I think it becomes a theme every single week where I think he's too big of a name right now. Like, it's part of what got Cam Newton out of the league, right? To where he was probably good enough to be a backup quarterback, but his name was too big to be a backup quarterback. I think Russell Wilson's name is too big to be a backup quarterback right now.
I tend to agree. Like, you got to almost check your ego at the door when you're, yeah, you know, somewhat of his stature being asked to play a backup role. But that being said, Zaz, where is he going if he's, like, wanting to still play football next year, right? Like, I don't see the obvious, he goes here and he starts. I mean, you could bring up Atlanta, but if I'm Atlanta, why would I want Russell Wilson when I could get maybe Kirk Cousins? You could bring up Minnesota, but if they're moving on from Kirk Cousins, well, it's probably because they're going to draft somebody. They're going to do something different rather than bring in, you know, a similar type of quarterback, whether you think Russ could still play or not. He's in at least the same tier, kind of, to what Kirk Cousins is. So you start really going down the list of options. I don't think the Giants are bringing in Russ. I think the Giants will play Daniel Jones for one more year. His contract's no longer guaranteed after that. And if they like someone at six this year, maybe they draft a quarterback. Maybe it's J.J. McCarthy. Or Giants have 2 second-round picks. They could get their quarterback in round two or trade back in to the back half of round one, like what the Ravens did, for example, with Lamar Jackson in 2018. So you kind of go through the list of teams here. Where's Russell Wilson playing that's definitely giving him a chance to start? I don't know if there's that obvious team right now.
So how about this in regards to Daniel Jones? All right, we got this, I don't know, a little bit of a bombshell earlier today. Rich Eisen from The Rich Eisen Show. Here's this about Daniel Jones.
Number three of my top five rumors I heard at the Combine is the Giants are absolutely done with Daniel Jones.
Wow.
Done.
Wow. Absolutely done.
Done. Might have to play him this year.
Whoa.
But that ain't it. And they feel that ain't it. The words I heard at the Combine multiple times, two words were buyer's remorse.
Wow. I don't know. Like, Jake, you're there in New York. Have you heard anything remotely like that the Giants are absolutely out on Daniel Jones?
So I didn't hear it as strong as Rich heard it, but I too was at the Combine last week, and the rumblings I heard is that the Giants are very much open to the idea that Daniel Jones is not their long-term answer. You know, the thought was a year ago when they gave him the contract, it was, well, he had a good year. He won us a playoff game. We have an offensive genius in Brian Daboll who maybe unlocked something, but we don't know truly if he's our guy, so we'll do a compromise. We'll guarantee 2 years of this four-year deal, and we could get out of it if it goes wrong. Well, this past year, he didn't play well, suffered a neck injury, and then tore his ACL when he came back from that neck injury. The story of Daniel Jones' career, besides inconsistency, has been availability. He's been hurt a lot. So I think the Giants have kind of reached the point where they realize, yeah, if everything goes right, we could probably win with Daniel Jones. It would be a good team, but he's too big of a risk. We're not going to stake our careers to a guy who's been injury prone, who's too inconsistent. So I think the rumblings with the Giants is if there's someone they love at six, they're picking sixth overall. Would they do it? I think if they love the player, they would. I also think there's a scenario, as I mentioned, they got 2 second-round picks. Could they get their quarterback with one of those picks?
But see, isn't that interesting? Because, okay, if they're at number six. Is there a quarterback that they love? You go take him at number six. We kind of went through this already, and that's how they got Daniel Jones, right? Where was it the number three overall pick? What number was it when they took Daniel Jones?
Ironically enough, it was the sixth pick, and Dave Gettleman had the famous line, the former Giants GM, that he was in, quote, full-bloom love when he loved Daniel Jones. So if Joe Shane, the Giants GM right now, is in full-bloom love with J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix or Bo Nix, maybe they're in play at number six if we assume the big three quarterbacks of Caleb, May, and Daniels are already off the board.
We're building.
Right, because Daniel Jones was selected way earlier than anybody would have thought that he was going to be selected. So we'd be going through the exact same thing, right, where, okay, they're going to move off of Daniel Jones then, and they're going to take J.J. McCarthy a lot, or whoever, it could be Bo Nix, whatever, or Michael Penix, and they're going to take him way earlier than anyone else would have had him on board. But if you're in love with him, then you're in love with him. Like, if he's going to work, if he's the guy, no one's going to care where you took him, right?
100%. And I also think maybe it's not they do it at six, but they do have 2 second-round picks. I mean, could you trade back into round one, and so you get the fifth-year option on the guy you pick? Because if I'm the Giants, I look at it like this. We actually could have, like, the Kansas City model right before our eyes. We could play Daniel Jones this year. He's under contract for one more year. And we could have a quarterback that sits behind him that learns and then takes over the following year. And at pick six, we don't need to go quarterback there. Why don't we take Malik Nabers? Why don't we take, Roma Dunze? We could get a stud wide receiver to help Daniel Jones and also help our eventual quarterback that we take either in round two or we trade back in to round one so we get our quarterback with that fifth-year option and we could kind of build around him through this draft and put that quarterback in a spot where he doesn't need to play right away, which maybe is the best case scenario for a guy like J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix or one of these guys that's not thought to be like a plug-and-play day one starter in this league.
You're listening to Amber and Ian here on ESPN Radio. He's Jake Asman.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
This is Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM channel 80. Amber and Ian is presented by Progressive Insurance. You may have noticed we're neither Amber nor Ian. He's Jake Asman. I'm Jonathan Zaslow. And we're going to bring aboard our producer behind the glass, James Steele. Let's do a little bit of big deal or not a big deal. Go ahead, James.
It's making headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
But is it a big deal? Or not a big deal with Amber and Ian.
Now, Jake, you may not be aware, but this is a very, very popular segment, Big Deal or Not a Big Deal, which originated on my program many years ago here in South Florida. James likes to claim that it's his own. Don't let him tell you that. He heard it from me one time, maybe on an edition of Zaslow and Amber. I don't know, here in Miami. But either way, it made its way to ESPN Radio and Amber and Ian, so I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, that's not true. I came up with this all myself, and it's very original, and no one has ever done this before.
I don't know who to believe, but I'll take both your words for it.
Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure one time I yelled copyright which means I own it. Everybody knows. Just yell copyright, and it's yours. So you may be hearing from my lawyer one day, James. I don't know.
I thought you had to send yourself a letter in the mail. That's how you copyrighted things.
That is not how it's
done. All rights reserved.
All right, so let's start here. We talked a little bit about the Buffalo Bills earlier today, but there's more news with them. They're bringing back a familiar face to be the quarterback to back up Josh Allen. Mitchell Trubisky agreed to a deal on Wednesday, a source confirmed to ESPN. Trubisky, like I said, will back up Josh Allen once again after doing so in the 2021 season, which helped lead to an opportunity to compete for a starting role with the Steelers beginning in 2022. Steelers drafted Kenny Pickett. Things didn't work out with Trubisky. But now he's back with the Bills. So, Jake, big deal, not a big deal. Trubisky back with the Bills.
I would say it's a big deal. I mean, you're one hit away from your backup having to come in, and the Bills are a championship contender. Can Trubisky, here's my definition of a good backup. If your guy gets hurt, your starter, can your backup come in, let's say over a four-game sample size, and go at least 500, 2-2 or better? And I think with Mitch, with that team, the answer is probably yes. I don't think he's a starter in this league, but I think he's a decent backup. He knows their system. I'll say yes. He's a good backup, so I'll say big deal. They needed a backup, and he's solid.
I'm going big deal on the amount of time that was just spent on Mitchell Trubisky on ESPN Radio. I cannot tell you the last time that this amount of time was spent on him. I'm going not a big deal for the Buffalo Bills signing him. Josh Allen's a quarterback who stays predominantly healthy, so I don't think it's that big of a deal. I'm going not a big deal there, James.
Well, they said that about Aaron Rodgers, too, and that lasted four plays, so I'm just saying.
All right, let's stick with the NFL here, the Seattle Seahawks. Release safeties Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, who is a friend of the show, and tight end Will Disley on Tuesday, the team announced. Adams, a three-time Pro Bowl selection, was set to make a non-guaranteed $16.5 million in 2024 and count for $26.9 million against the cap. That release wipes out the $16.5 million off the Seahawks books. And they also released Quandre Diggs, which will free up $11 million in cap space. And will be $10 million in dead money. Zaz, big deal, not a big deal. Seahawks releasing a couple of their safeties.
I'm going not a big deal. It seems like the Seahawks, I don't think they're in a rebuild. They're in more like a reload is what they're doing right now. And I think overall, Jamal Adams has probably been a disappointment for the Seattle Seahawks. You know, you want to talk about the New York Jets make terrible moves. That trade, trading away Jamal Adams, that's a great trade. They got a lot in return for Jamal Adams. I know he has a very contentious relationship, Jamal Adams, with the New York media and the New York fan base. But I'm going not a big deal here for the Seahawks releasing Jamal Adams, Jake.
Yeah, not a big deal because I'll tell you what, Jamal Adams is not any good. He's more of a liability in pass coverage than Ryan Gosling was in Remember the Titans. He's been on the downswing the last several years. I mean, he's not good. He hasn't played well, and he's attacking, you know, New York reporters' wives on social media. Like, you know, dare I say karma with this from Jamal. He hasn't been able to stay healthy. He had one really good season his first year in Seattle. But as you brought up, Zaz, the Jets got two first-round picks for a box safety who can't cover. One of those picks turned out to be Garrett Wilson, who won the Offensive Rookie of the Year. The other pick was Elijah Vera Tucker, who went healthy. It's been a big hit, but he's a Pro Bowl-level offensive lineman. So that trade, you could criticize the Jets for a lot. It's one of the best moves they've ever made in their franchise's history.
Yeah, trading multiple first-round picks for a safety. That's a heist for the New York Jets, James.
We talked a little bit about Aaron Rodgers earlier today also, and he made a guest appearance on Cameron Haynes' Keep Hammering Collective podcast this week, in which he discussed his NFL career and the expectations for this coming season. Among the topics, Rodgers pinpointed a pair of Jets free agents he's hoping the team will be able to re-sign during the offseason, punter Thomas Morstead and kicker Greg Zuerlein. So, Jake, big deal, not a big deal that Morstead and Zuerlein have the Aaron Rodgers seal of approval in New York.
I think it's a big deal because I think Rodgers realizes they were probably the two best players on the Jets this past year. No joke. And this is a Jets team that has, you know, Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson and Quinn Williams and Sauce Gardner. I mean, Zuerlein missed two kicks all year, and Thomas Morstead, their punter, he was like AFC Player of the Week after their win over the Giants. It was like an ugly game where he had like three punts inside the five. So I think it's a big deal. I appreciate Rodgers showing some love to the specialists. Those guys were awesome last year.
Of course it's a big deal. We know that Aaron Rodgers is running that team. The personnel moves all have his seal of approval. So if Aaron Rodgers is saying something good about those guys, you know it carries weight. The Jets are going to do whatever Aaron Rodgers wants. And it, as from hearing from Aaron Rodgers earlier, it may be for the next several years if it works out the Jets' way. So I'm going big deal there.
All right, let's move to the NBA here. New Orleans Pelicans star Zion Williamson said he will participate in the dunk contest if he makes the All-Star team. Williamson scored 16 points in 26 minutes in a dominant 139-98 win Tuesday over the Raptors. After the game, he was asked if he could ever see himself participating in the dunk contest. Quote, "If I'm in the All-Star game, I'll do the dunk contest," he said. "But if I'm not, I'm not doing it." Williamson, who's 23, has been an All-Star twice in 2021. And that was his second year in the league and last season. He did not make the team this year despite averaging 22 and 5 for the Pelicans, who are the fifth seed. Zaz, big deal, not a big deal. Zion says he'll participate in the dunk contest.
I would like to say not a big deal, but I guess he said it with a microphone in front of him and cameras. So I don't think he can go back on it now. But if he said he's only 23 years old, he's going to be in the All-Star game again one day at some point in his career, and he said it. So unless he wants everybody telling him he's a liar, I think we got to go big deal. We're going to see Zion Williamson in the dunk contest at some point. Now, if you would ask me, is the dunk contest a big deal? I'd go, not a big deal. Go ahead, Jake.
I would say not a big deal because LeBron once said he was going to do the dunk contest too, and he never did.
That's
so
right.
Zion
right.
could say the same thing, and is anyone going to hold him accountable for it? I don't know. It'd be nice to see him do it, but shouldn't there be some sort of investigation if he makes the All-Star game just because fans are voting for him and he gets the fan vote and he's not deserving, but they want to see him in the dunk contest? So maybe he's playing the long game here. He's like, huh, I put this out there. I'm more likely to make the All-Star game because fans are going to vote for me because they want me in the dunk contest too. It's a package deal.
But you see, Zion's mistake was linking it to the All-Star appearance. LeBron just saying he would participate in the game. I mean, heck, maybe LeBron will do it next year. And then he kept his word. With Zion, he's linking he's making a timetable by saying, if I'm in the All-Star game, I will do it. So that's a big mistake on Zion's part, then, I would say. Go ahead, James.
All right, I got one more here real quick. Already a Stanley Cup favorite, the Florida Panthers.
Thank you, James. Appreciate you bringing me in. That's very nice of you. I wanted to give everybody a quick update on this trade coming out of Ottawa. The Florida Panthers, who, you know, are bulking up for the playoffs, may or may not be a favorite team of a one Jonathan Zaslow.
Yes.
They bulk up and they get Vladimir Tarasenko. And James, as much as I would hate to give him a, you know, some confidence going to the playoffs, Zaslow's got a player on his hands. This guy somehow was a plus 13 in Ottawa this season.
On a terrible team.
On a bad team. Let's just hope the stink of Ottawa doesn't follow him down to Sunrise. But what a deadline deal for the Panthers, who are one of the best already in the NHL. Back to you guys. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you. Excellent, excellent contribute. You know what that's called, Jake?
What's that?
That's called the rich get richer. That's right. My Florida. Was that what we were going to do, James? Were you going to ask me, is that a big deal, the Florida Panthers acquiring Vladimir Tarasenko today? Because that's a big deal.
Yeah, big deal, not a big deal. The Panthers acquire forward Vladimir Tarasenko from the Senators. Big deal, not a big
deal. That's a big deal. All right, ahead of the deadline, which is in a couple days, the Panthers add a 40-goal scorer. All right, he scored 40 goals a couple times in his career. Jake, I know you're fired up about Vladimir Tarasenko to the Panthers. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. I will say, I don't really care where you finish, though, in the hockey standings, as long as you make the playoffs. Because as we saw with the Bruins last year and countless other examples, just get
who
in.
Who beat them?
I think you might have an answer to that.
That's
one.
That's right.
But that's exactly my point, right? Just get in. You got a shot. The Islanders, my Islanders, baby. They won 4 in a row, so the season starts now. Yeah. Let's go, Gettleman.
That's right. But between the Panthers and Heat, we own that building. Game 7's in Boston. We own Game 7 in Boston. May as well call TD Garden. That's Miami Garden. That's what it's called. And that right there is another edition, an award-winning edition, a big deal or not a big deal. All right, there you have it. So, coming up next, Caleb Williams. Is it possible he's not a week one starter? You're listening to Amber and Ian. That's next on ESPN Radio. Good NBA coming up tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN TV. Bucks and Warriors, which will follow this Clipper-Rocket game, which is now tied at 108. This has turned into a good game. Also paying attention tonight, Kings and Lakers. That is at 10:30. You're listening to Amber and Ian on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. He's Jake Asman. I'm Jonathan Zaslow, as both Amber and Ian are out tonight. So we got some good NBA still coming up tonight. There's been a few games going on throughout the evening here. But the NFL draft is exactly 50 days away, Jake. Now, are we... What's our setup for the NFL draft in the Asman household, all right? What do we do? Is this like a huge event for you?
Oh, well, I mean, for every Jet fan, it's our Super Bowl, you know, because, you know, we're never actually going to see a Super Bowl. So this is it, baby. Yeah, I love the draft, though. I've always loved the draft. You know, growing up, I would love to go to Radio City when it was still there in Manhattan. I went a couple times.
So you've
times.
Been to the draft a few times.
Yeah, I was at the draft in 2009 when the Jets traded up to take Mark Sanchez, which was like a huge deal. So that was just absolutely insane.
And isn't it a tradition that the Jets fan has to boo the pick?
Usually, but we actually were excited about that one because it was like, wow, quarterback, like we're making a move. But yeah, the history of the Jet fan booing their pick is a long one. And honestly, we're usually pretty good about it. We're usually right. Like the Jets usually get it wrong and the fans are right to boo. So you do have that. But the draft's fun, man. I mean, I feel like we know so much more about these prospects than ever before. So that certainly helps. And I enjoy it. I know people are like, oh, they're just picking names. Who cares? But, you know, someone who's been to a couple drafts, it's fun. It's a good environment. And it provides hope for all 32 teams in the league. So I think it's a great event.
So we all know, or at least we're like 99.9% sure, Caleb Williams is going to be the number one pick. We're also fairly certain that it's going to be the Chicago Bears who are selecting Caleb Williams. Although I don't know that we're any closer today than we were before the combine of finding a new home for Justin Fields. Like, are you surprised that we haven't had a deal yet? Because we know how it goes, the combine. They're all talking to each other. But the combine ended a couple days ago, and I feel like there hasn't been a ton of chatter over the last few days about a Justin Fields trade.
Yeah, I got to admit, I am a little surprised he hasn't been traded. And you know what this tells me? That the view of Justin Fields by NFL people is not what the view is by fans and those
in the
media.
That surprises me.
It does, because there seems to be such a desperation for quarterbacks. And, you know, Justin Fields, while he has obviously not been great, he does have, like, physical talent that pops off when you watch him. He's a great runner. He's made plays. He did finish the year playing pretty good ball for a Chicago team that, you know, won some games down the stretch. I just think it comes down to the fact he's in a spot where you're about to have to pay him. And I don't think teams feel comfortable acquiring him and then having to give him a big contract. So it's like, do we want Justin Fields and have to maybe trade away a second-round pick? Or, you know, could we sign someone in free agency that will not cost as much, maybe be better value, or just draft someone in a quarterback class that might have four or five guys that go in the first round? I think that hurts his market.
Well, assuming that they're going to wind up moving Justin Fields at some point here, Caleb Williams will go number one overall. And then the question becomes, is he a lock to start in week one? Will he be a starter right away? Not everybody thinks that he should. Well, Ryan Leaf, former NFL quarterback, he was on the Dan Patrick Show, and he's a proponent of Caleb Williams sitting.
You better be under the understanding that you're going to sit him this year, and that's not going to happen.
Why would you sit him?
Well, because 75% of what he made him so great in college is not transferable to the NFL. He's not going to be able to do that. He can't do what he did in college 75% of the time and be successful at the NFL level. He can do the 25% part at the NFL level, but he needs some time. He needs to get under center. He needs to understand how to throw on time, on platform, from the pocket. What he can do off platform is what makes him so exciting, because he may be one of the most talented quarterbacks in this year's draft and in many in the past year's draft. But he is a guy that I don't think can be a starter on day one.
So that was Ryan Leaf, former NFL quarterback, on the Dan Patrick Show on Caleb Williams. And there's a couple things there. The first one is the 75% part that he can't do what he did in college right away at the NFL level. Jake, I think we could probably say that about every quarterback that is coming into the NFL. The things that you have been successful at playing against student athletes is probably not going to transfer right away against grown men like the Warriors that we see who play in the National Football League. And also, if
Caleb Williams isn't going to be ready for the NFL, that he should sit for a year, you could probably ask the question, what NFL quarterback would ever be ready then to play from the get-go?
Well, then everyone should sit, right? You're 100% yeah. right. I mean, it doesn't happen. And even if he doesn't start week one, there's no scenario where he's not playing by, like, week three or week four. Like, the last number one pick that they tried to sit and sit behind a veteran was Baker Mayfield in 2018. And by week three, week four that year, well, guess what? He was playing and he never gave the job back. Caleb Williams, the term to describe him has been used a couple times in recent drafts, generational. If he's a generational quarterback prospect, he's playing week one. There's no scenario where he's not. And honestly, like Ryan Leaf saying 75% of what he does is not, you know, not transferable to the NFL. I think a lot of what he had to do in college was because this USC team he was playing with this past year wasn't that great. Their defense stunk. He's always on the field. They had to score a million points for them to have a chance. They didn't have a great O-line. Their weapons were not nearly as good this season as they were the previous year. I think a lot of what Caleb had to do on the field at Southern Cal was out of necessity, not because he wanted to play like Mahomes because that's what he wanted to do to show off. I think he had to play that way for USC to have a chance in any of their games.
Now, there is the opposite side of that, where I think most people hear about the idea to sit Caleb Williams. I do think it's smart. We haven't been in that world, though, where NFL teams sit their quarterback that first year. That feels like forever ago. So there is the other side that thinks it would be crazy to sit Caleb Williams. Here's Ryan Clark, ESPN NFL analyst from GetUp.
I'm going to bring up three names right now. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Yeah. I'm going to start with Lamar Jackson. Once he's drafted, amongst quarterbacks that are in the NFL, Lamar Jackson is going to be the only one that scares you more with his legs.
Ooh.
That can move the pocket the way he can.
Really?
That can be elusive in the backfield the way he can. Now, I'm going to bring up two other names. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. Immediately upon being drafted, when we're talking about arm talent, when we're talking about off-platform throws, when we're talking about being able to put the football anywhere you want to put it on the field, that's the tier he's on. Now, you tell me this. If you see a dude and those are the people you're comparing him to, you're going to say, we're going to draft him first overall because of all of those reasons. But you know what, dog? Don't trip. Sit down. I wish you would. You do that, that's going to be malpractice. You should be fired. Your wife should never get a job. And your kid should be kicked out of school.
Jake, I don't know why the wife is catching strays, all right? The wife didn't do anything wrong. The kids are not going to be allowed into college. It seems a little bit harsh. But I will say, you know, if they go with Caleb Williams and they move on from Fields, from what I understand, this is a super divisive conversation among the Chicago Bears fans. Really divisive. Can you imagine they move on from Fields, and then that Chicago Bear fan is not seeing Caleb Williams from day number one? I feel like the pressure would be enormous on the organization.
Well, they can't re-sign Mitch Trubisky to be the backup because he was already signed. So you have that at least, Bears fans. But, I mean, you're 1,000% right. If you're taking Caleb Williams number one overall and replacing Justin Fields, he's playing week one. And, look, I don't need Ryan Leaf's, you know, breakdown on top quarterback draft picks given his history either. I'd like to add that.
Wow. Oh, Ryan Leaf. All right. I mean, I understand. Not a good career, but he's watching tape out there. He thinks 75, not 76% or 77%, 75%.
Very specific number, yes.
That's right. I'd like to know how he came up with that. I was watching, you know what? I think it's giving it 70%. I think we're closer to 75% is probably not going to translate. I'd like to know how he came up with that number.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 Central on ABC.